My guest today is Robert C. Martin, often known as Uncle Bob Martin. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Can I call you Bob?
Yes, of course.
Thank you very much. Call me David.
David.
I'm an admirer of yours. It's a thrill of mine to have you on my show. Thanks
thank
for
you.
Coming.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. We were talking about professionalism in the software industry.
Yeah.
I've been in the software industry for a couple of decades now.
Yeah.
And maybe, I'm guessing maybe you have too.
A couple.
Yeah. Okay. Why is professionalism a problem? It's not a problem in other professions.
Well, it is a problem
it
in
is?
Other
okay.
professions. Of course it is. I mean, there was a time when doctors were not very professional. There was a time when lawyers were not very professional. And those professions managed to police themselves. They managed to
the bar associations.
Yes,
AMA,
they created the beginnings of those associations, AMA, bar, and so on. We haven't done that. We haven't even begun to do that.
We need to unionize, I guess.
Well, I'd rather not unionize, but something,
something. Isn't the bar and the AMA, aren't they unions?
They have that characteristic, and they'll offer insurance. And okay, so, but we as a profession have reached a level of influence in the society that is much greater than they had when those guys created their rules, when the doctors and the lawyers and the architects created their rules. We still are lacking those rules.
Okay.
And yet society depends upon us now for its existence. The normal person in the Western world interacts with software on a second-by-second basis.
Sure.
Whether they're driving their car or tapping on their phone or boiling something in the microwave oven or anything.
Sure.
The amount of software in the walls is enormous.
Right.
I've got two thermostats in my home that are Wi-Fi thermostats. How much software is running in the infrastructure around us? And it's an enormous amount.
Yeah, we don't think of it because we take it for granted.
We take it for granted. But here we are. We're the coders. We're the ones who make this work. We are the ones now who make our civilization work. Nothing works without software. Mm. And that software is, in general, not very well made. It's typically made by people who are underexperienced, who have no sense of standard, basic standard professional ethics, who have no concept of a quality level that they have to maintain. Most programmers are driven by schedule and the need to appear to be moving fast. So you have the startup culture, which is a very diseased culture in my mind, where, well, you know, time to market is everything, and you hire a bunch of 22-year-olds and you make them work 80 hours a week. And somehow you're going to get good stuff out of that. And, of course, you're not. Now, you and I have been in the business for a long time. How many programmers do you think there were in the world when I started? That was 50 years ago. 50 years ago, I wrote my first line of code. How many programmers were there in the world?
I don't know the number, but I know that the barriers to entry were a lot higher in those days. Because you couldn't buy a computer for $1,000 and put it in your basement.
So the barrier to entry was
you
enormous
had to, get,
to have
you
a
had
computer.
To get hired.
Yeah, you had
by,
to be hired.
By a big organization. And to get hired, you had probably had to have an advanced degree.
Well, now, so that's very interesting. I was hired.
Not true today.
I was hired by a client service bureau in 1969 at the age of 18. Having no degree, having nothing.
Okay, that was,
and,
that was
and not
atypical,
even knowing.
I think,
yeah, a little atypical, a little.
Okay.
But in my career, as I moved through my career, what I found was that employers were willing to hire programmers just because they said they were programmers. And if they could write a little code and you could test them at an interview, okay, you're hired. There was no requirement where I went for a degree for any kind of lengthy experience. I never, from the age of 18 on, I never had trouble getting a job as a programmer.
I see.
I could get it. Now, how many programmers were there? Well, maybe there were a few thousand.
Right.
Okay, this would have been 1962.
Right.
There were maybe a few thousand.
There were fewer computers in those days. I think that was part of it.
There were a few thousand computers.
Right.
Take that forward 10 years, 1972. We now have mini computers. We've got PDP-8s, maybe the beginnings of PDP-11s. How many programmers are there? And the number's probably 10 times as many because there were a lot more computers. Mm-hmm. Go to 82. Now we got microcomputers.
Sure.
The 80s, the 80s.
You could buy one for your house.
Now maybe we've got, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe a million programmers in the world. How many are there today?
Many.
Many.
I have a computer on my wrist right now.
How many programmers
yeah.
are there today? Right, and that number is probably in the order of several hundred million. Maybe 100 million, maybe 200 million. Depends on if you count the VBA programmers. But it doesn't matter. There's an awful lot of them. And if you plot that on a curve, you'll see that there's a doubling rate of about 5 years. Every 5 years, the number of programmers in the world doubles. Which means that half the programmers in the world have less than 5 years experience. And this has always been true. And will remain true as long as we're on that growth curve.
It's hard to imagine another industry that happened in.
Yes, exactly.
So this industry exploded a lot faster than law or medicine, for example.
Which leaves our industry in a state of perpetual inexperience. Mm. There are not enough guys like us who have been around the block a few times to teach the kids coming out of school, or not out of school, how to do real software, how to write software well. And so we wind up with massive amounts of code getting written that's very low-quality code. So, case in point, healthcare.gov, an absolute disaster. And this is a case where you've got, no matter how you feel about the politics of the situation, you've got a law that was passed by both houses of Congress, signed into law by the President of the United States, and almost completely derailed by a software failure. And the response to that was, in the government, the response to that was a very serious consideration of appointing a cabinet position called the CTO of the United States of America, reporting to the president. Now, that role actually exists in government, but it's not a cabinet position.
Right.
They were going to elevate it to a cabinet position so that suddenly we would have the specter of government regulation upon the software industry. What's it going to take for that to click in?
Well, you said the specter. That implies it's a bad thing.
So, is it a bad thing?
In your opinion,
I believe it's inevitable
that
the software industry will be regulated. The question is whether we can get there before they do.
We as an industry.
We as an industry.
Ourselves.
If we can define the rules, if we can define the standards and regulate ourselves the way doctors did, the way lawyers did, the way architects did, if we can do that before government gets there, then when government gets there, we can present them with our rules, and they'll happily adopt them as they did with the doctors and the lawyers and the architects. If, on the other hand, they get there first, then they'll commission a team of some kind, and they will come up with the rules, and we will be told, you know, what languages to use and what processes to use and what documents we have to write and what sign-offs we have to get and what courses we have to go to and so on. And I think that would be a disaster. And all it's going to take for that to happen is one big enough bug. One bug, some poor software schmuck does one dumb thing and kills 10,000 people. And the politicians of the world will react as they should.
They'll be harumphing all over the place.
And they'll start to pass laws. And you know, we'd better be there before they are. So that's kind of my hobby horse.
Are we doing that right now? Are we at least? I think you've made it clear that we're not doing it well enough. Have we started that process?
The process has begun. There's the Agile movement that began 15 years ago, which originally was about higher quality code, better quality software, better quality teams. It's been diluted a fair bit. Most people nowadays think it's a management scheme. Without the engineering excellence bound into it, which is very unfortunate. It's also begun in the craftsmanship movement. We see lots of craftsmanship shops opening up, and they have a defined quality, a defined set of standards, a set of disciplines that they follow.
Okay. Is that the craftsmanship movement in a nutshell? Is that organizations that have defined what they mean by quality?
Well, the craftsmanship movement has done this. It has defined what it means by quality, at least to some extent.
What is the craftsmanship movement? Just describe it for
the craftsmanship movement is just a group of software developers who have created a document called the Software Craftsmanship Manifesto, which defines a set of principles that they want to live their lives by, that they want to live their careers by, and they want to guide their careers. And in the midst of that, there's the notion of disciplines and standards. It's not perfectly well defined yet, but at least it's a good beginning. I think what we're going to be seeing over the years coming up are guilds forming, groups of developers that gather together and declare, put a stake in the ground and say, this is the way we write our software. We write tests. We pair program. We do these things that are disciplines that help us get things done well. And you might see several of these guilds popping up. And over time, what I hope happens is that software customers will start to go to those guilds. Say, well, okay. I mean, those guilds do a better job than those over there. And we can begin to winnow out what the best practices are and what the best standards are. It's begun. We can see companies like that forming already. And I hope it continues that way. Otherwise, it's going to be jammed down our throat.
Why isn't that happening today with consulting companies? There are some that are more that write better software.
Yes,
others. and disciplined than others. And you would think the market would just shake out the bad ones.
So that's where it is happening right now, is in the consulting companies. I can see that beginning. There's several consulting companies which have adopted these standards.
Those become the guilds that you talked about.
They're doing very well. Now, how do the other companies compete? Well, they'll get an army of people from South America or India, and they'll promise all kinds of low rates, and they'll deliver something on a date that's probably later than they wanted. But in the end, you end up paying for that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a while before I think we shake through all of that.
Sure. Cost is still a big factor among customers.
Cost is a huge factor.
And that's tends to slow the things down.
Yeah. What we haven't recognized yet is that the higher quality is the lower cost.
In the long run of this.
Even in the short term. Even in the short term. Why? Because you wind up with a mess that you can't deploy.
Okay. Right. But you don't know that until you deploy. I guess that's
you don't
the
know that until
that's
you deploy. And you have lots of promises. Promises, and then delay.
Do you think that certification has any place in this? Like
somewhere.
Yeah, so
somewhere.
There's a lot of criticism of certification that people pass a test and they hang the wall.
The certification to criticize is the 2-day course that gives you a certificate that means you took a 2-day course. And that's not much of a certificate.
Right.
The certificate that is meaningful is the diploma of a doctor or a lawyer that he hangs up on his wall and says that, I finished 6 years of school and these guys signed off on it.
Wow.
That would be interesting. And if we had that kind of educational program, I think it would be good. Right now we don't, and the universities really aren't teaching it and aren't teaching software developers very well. So our software developers come out of university with this very unrealistic view of what a programmer is. Many of the bad habits they learn in university. Because how do you get a university project done? You do goofy stuff and work until 3 a.m. and you work like hell and you hand in a program that works and you get a good grade. Well, that's not how you get software done.
That's how I did it when I was a consultant.
That's how we all did it in college. But that's not how you get good software
I actually
done.
Don't have a degree in computer science.
Neither do
so.
I. And that, by the way, is another very common trend amongst people our age.
Sure.
The number of degrees is very small.
Mm-hmm.
We taught ourselves how to write code.
What people watching this video, and they say, Uncle Bob's right. We need to get better at this. What can they do?
They can get better.
Okay, just individually. They can study harder.
So it always begins.
Well, they can get better how? Will they read something or...
Oh, there's lots of books.
Buy your books, right?
There's lots of books you can buy. There's lots of videos you can watch. There's lots of websites you can read. So I've written a number of books. Clean Code, Clean Coder are some of them. I have a video series that I preach endlessly.
Where can we find that?
About this. Cleancoders.com is the video series. And there are other folks endlessly preaching on this topic. And so if you go to anything by Martin Fowler or Kent Beck or Corey Haynes or Brian Merrick or any of these guys who are very vocal on the issue of high professionalism in software.
Mm-hmm. Corey's been on my show.
Oh, has he?
Yes. Oh, yeah, he's a good old friend.
Good guy. And you know, the inventor of
couch surfing.
The code retreats, right?
Oh, the code
retreats around the world.
He's very passionate
about
that.
Yeah. Global day of code retreat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bob, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Tell your friends in technology that the only way to go fast is to go well.